What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 119 of Valley Town. I'm Chan-Man V, and joining me today is Noxious. What's up, buddy?
Not much, as usual. Just putting googly eyes on my stream emotes.
Good stuff. And then joining us again is Zalay. What's up?
Yo, it's good to be here. Love me some Valley Town. Really enjoying this month of Hearthstone.
Oh, yeah. We are too, man. Totally. N'Goro has been such a great success. N'Goro and the reset, let's just put it that way, has been, I think, amazing for the game. And that's why each of these weeks we've just been trying to cover a lot of decks. But, you know, last week we tried to cover Paladin. So this week we're going to do Shaman. We're going to really dive deep into the decks and maybe some cards that are worth discussing. And then we're going to talk a little bit about news. There's just a few things in the news, and then we have a bunch of emails to talk about at the end. But before we get started, I want to just mention that this episode is sponsored by Ting, which is a mobile U.S. cell phone company that provides nationwide LTE access using both the T-Mobile and Sprint networks. And if you guys are the type of cell phone users that, you know, get overcharged for data, or you don't use up all your data each and every month, then Ting is going to be perfect for you, because they only charge what you use, and there's no contracts, nothing like that, no plans, and they don't do rates or anything like that. So this probably is a very good solution for you if you're one of those people. So check out value.ting.com, and there's a button that allows you to check to see if your phone works with their network, and I think 80-85% of the phones that are in the space right now do work with it. So check it out, and thanks again for them for sponsoring this. There's a $25 off promo code there too that you can use, which most of the time pays for the first bill, because the average Ting bill is $23. So
Yeah. So I'm paying like $50 a month on T-Mobile.
Yeah.
You're telling me I can get better coverage because it'd be T-Mobile plus Sprint networks combined, and it's going to cost me like half as much.
Yeah. So in
and the first month's free.
Right. Rough. Exactly.
By using the Value Town promo.
Or value.tang.com. Exactly. Our guest is better at plugging this than I am. This is amazing.
Are you telling me I can get all the value?
That's just a good deal.
I know. That's what I've had a few people now, you know, that we're talking about.
I like
about
money.
Yeah, exactly.
Good stuff.
But yeah, thanks again. Thanks a lot to them for sponsoring this episode. But our week in N'Goro, let's just jump into the show. What you guys been playing lately?
Wow. So many. Like, this is actually the first time I feel like I actually need 18 deck slots. and I mean this. I've been actually shuffling decks around as a result of, you know, having 18 decks. The thing, I think one of the big issues too is I can't reorder them, but, you know, that's another issue entirely. But I feel like I could have built 18 different decks in this meta, and all of them could have gotten me to Legend. Perhaps not at the same speed and with the same efficiency, but that's at least 18 decks that I can play on Ladder and Climb with. And that's a huge amount. Recently, I'd say I've been focusing a lot on the Miracle Priest with the Elemental package. You know, when you're playing Servant of Kalamos and Discover Lyra and everything. With the Divine Spirit Inner Fire, that's been working super well for climbing. And some Dragon Priest as well.
Wait, I don't know. What's the Elemental package do for Priest?
Well, it helps. So you play like one Blaze Caller at the top end just for removal, and then you play double Servant to get Lyra and Radiant Ellies, and then that helps you get a foothold on the board. It's actually pretty hard.
Is Radiant Ellie an elemental? Mm-hmm. Is that what it is? It's the radiant, 2-mana 2/3 that makes
it's
your spells cheaper.
Radiant
that's an elemental,
dude.
I don't
oh
play Hearthstone.
Oh my god.
I'm just trying. Okay.
Yeah.
So what cards benefit from elementals? The 7-mana 6/6 that deals 5, the 5-mana 4/5 that discovers something.
Yeah.
Right. And that's the guy. It's actually so.
Do you play the 4-mana 3/5 Divine Shield Taunt? Because that guy's not an elemental, but he benefits.
That's a good one, too.
I play it in the deck. And the reason, so the way the deck works, it seems like you're not familiar with it, is really just.
I'm not.
You try to get something to stick, and you Divine Spirit Inner Fire somebody to death. And it's not as unlikely to happen as you'd think. I think Dragon Priest overall is still slightly better. Yeah. But what these two decks do is similar in that they both. Well, they do what Priest does best, I think, in this expansion, which is generate infinite value through the Lyra package and the ability to discover more copies of her and the ability to just cycle spells nonstop. You're often able to just fill up your hand with not you know, nonsense, really.
Wait.
And win the game there.
Lyra is an elemental?
Oh, my God. Yeah. All right. Wait, can we just leave right now?
So you can discover her sometimes.
Okay. Oh, I'm starting to understand. Okay. It's coming together for
me.
Yes. Here's what's going on in my world. I'm going to DreamHack Austin pretty soon here. I'd really like to win that because right now I'm in contention. I'm somewhere, I think, like top three on points for North America. And if you end the year at like number one, you go straight to BlizzCon, which is worth I would love to go to BlizzCon, right? Yes. So I'm trying to be the number one contender. I'm trying to be super serious about everything. You know, I've finished top 10 Legend on Ladder the last 4 months. I'm going to try and make it five in a row this month if I can. So I've been preparing a lot for DreamHack Austin. So I'm trying to just focus in on stuff that's like I kind of know to be solid. So I'm not as in tune with all of, you know, what Noxious is talking about.
The meme priest, like all the memes.
Exactly.
Yeah. So a lot of what I have been working on preparing, I can't really talk about because it's secret preparation. Got to win.
All right. Yeah.
But I do have some cool stuff. Like I played a Flood Shaman on stream. I think we'll be talking about
that. We're definitely going to be talking about that in a second. And I mean, that's good. Actually, I think that Shaman's pretty good. Generally speaking, because finding crazy aggro decks that aren't Pirate Warrior right now is like super aggro. I'm not talking about just, you know, your mid-range, just to, you know, just what we see a lot of in the meta right now. Isn't that common outside of Pirate and maybe Druid? I think maybe those two things.
Well, I don't know. I feel like I've seen a bit of aggro. Like, I don't know if I want to put Zoo in there. Like, I've seen it a bit, but it's not common. Aggro Murloc Paladin is actually something people play.
If you look at aggro,
I feel like a lot of, even Rogue, you know, we've seen some lists that just err on the hyper aggressive side, even for some of the Miracle-ish stuff. They just start jamming in Argent Squires. I've just seen some weird stuff. And it's, you know, I don't think aggro is any weaker than it was before. If anything, it's probably just more powerful, like as a refined deck, than it was. So
aggro is alive and well. You can play it in a lot of classes pretty effectively. Yeah. Paladin, Warrior, Druid, Hunter's sort of aggro.
Sometimes,
kind of.
Sometimes
mage can be built aggro. You know. Like,
oh, that's okay. Good point. Yeah, that the mage one is. I would consider the mage one aggro. But
I mean, the point is, you can build a full four deck aggro lineup for sure if that's what you want to do.
Yeah. Good point. Yeah, for me, I've been playing a lot of Dragon Priest. I've been, you know how I am. I just want to get to Dragon Priest, so I've been playing a lot of that more so than your Control Priest. Just, you know, just with Lyra and the Miracle thing. I haven't played the Elemental one much, so might check that one out just for fun once the new season starts. Played some Control Shaman for a while, just a few days too, just to kind of see what the talk was about for a few days there. You know, late last week. And probably since the last show, I played some Paladin too, and Paladin's kind of dropped off, I feel like, in the last, this week. I don't see it nearly as much of it. And if I see it, it's more the Control Paladin, you know, the ones that's a lot slower and has more removal and that bit.
Yeah. The one that main decks equality, right? Like we talked about a lot of the lists that we had prior, and you know, there's been the, oh, I play Murlocs, but I also play, you know, Curator with Primordial Drake and a single copy of Kodo otherwise. Mm-hmm. So we've seen a little bit of everything from Paladin, but now some of them are going back to the whole, oh, I'm going to play double equality, double consec. Sure, I'll play the Curator package, but I'm still going to have my top end with Ragnaros and Tyrion, or he cut, you know, the Ragnaros in some cases. So there's still been a lot of, like, the pacing of each deck feels so different, even though the cards that change aren't that many. Like, you change, like, 3 to 4 cards, and suddenly the deck tries to play a different game.
Yeah.
And it's been really weird.
You know, I saw a tweet from Ben Brode, was it today? I think it was maybe earlier today, where it said that he got to Legend. He went from, like, rank 3 to Legend by switching out his Galacka Crawlers with Crabs.
Yeah, sure. And I believe it.
It sounds bad, but yeah. So switching them out. What do you guys think about those two cards right now? Because obviously they counter very different things. Which one's better?
Which one's better?
Yeah.
In a vacuum, Galacka Crawler is a better card just because 2-mana 2/3 is quite a bit better than 1-mana 1/2. And also it's the pirate package is splashable in more decks, right? You can put some pirates in Rogue. You can put, obviously there's Pirate Warrior. You can put some pirates in like Shaman. I've seen it. It's very common in the aggro token Druid to have a few pirates. So Galacka Crawler hits more decks and is also just like better when it's not doing Battlecry stuff. So Glacka Crawler is the better card, but there's enough Murlocs out there that
I think Undergrad
does some stuff.
It's pretty darn close. The number of decks that run both. It's very, very
sure,
close.
I guess a Finch Up package is everywhere. Like
yeah,
a lot of decks that
in
is
a lot
running.
Of
not everywhere, but a lot of people are running this climbing up. It's
Which,
not
by the way, it's dangerous putting the Finch Up package and everything, you know? Now that there's Hungry Crabs running about, that's not where I want to be.
I know, right? Who would have ever thought that Hungry since Trump pulled it off in Home Story, that
but it was a tournament.
I know that was a tournament.
That's so we're like, awesome. Sure, it's a tournament. He isolates the tech. Yeah. All right, jam it in. But then we're on ladder and we see Hungry Crab come up. Like that's when you know it's the hilarious. Metagame's just going all over the place. Stuff is happening.
Any cool concepts you've seen? You know that might not be good yet, but was just a cool concept that somebody's developed on. You know, whichever site or stream.
Noxious?
Yeah. I haven't seen anything.
Yeah, I
recently.
Saw a Temple Rogue with the quest in it. That wasn't just bounce, bounce, bounce.
Okay.
Dance game.
Dance
played,
game.
Like, double move.
Now, I see that quest and I'd want to go as all in on the quest as possible when I'm building that.
That's precisely how I felt. Yeah, I agree with you. But then that person basically took the old school, you know, sprint prep shenanigans really seriously. And the idea was Violet Teacher memes with the quest as soon as you got it completed, and then you vanish, play the token sometimes back. So there's no rush to complete the quest. The issue that I have with that is clearly one less card in your opening hand, bro. You sure about that? So what it comes down to is they often end up mulliganing the quest and not relying on it and just playing the tempo game. And when they do find it, then they set up those turns where they bounce everything back with a vanish, let's say, and then replay those cards to complete the quest somewhere in the mid-late game. But it's not, you know, it hasn't felt particularly good to me compared to just typical all in.
I mean the quest is just too good. It's too good for me to
well you mean it's good enough that you just want to go all in.
Yeah,
it's not
I mean,
too
I can't
good. It's just good enough that you want to go
later,
all in with it.
Yeah.
Right.
It is. It's just so it's like getting Jade, you know, super early. Or getting the mid range Jade cards super early.
Right. The faster the better, usually for those types
I had
of
a turn two the other day. Turn two, like he finished it with wisps in there. Perfect hand, dude. I was like, oh my god, that was ridiculous.
So on the topic of fun stuff that I mean, it's actually quite refined as a deck idea, but I saw a deck from, I believe, AP Drop. Now don't quote me on this, but he was running a mage list without ice blocks and no Arcanologist. And in this current meta, when everybody's pretty much, you know,
what was
agreeing
it,
that... Say what?
Then what was it? Like, what archetype was it?
I think it was just a typical tempo mage, if I'm not mistaken. It just tried to...
Yeah. Was he running, like,
He was in top 100 legend for a while with that deck.
Oh, okay. Wow.
For what it's all worth, right. It's definitely functioning.
Yeah, there's little different variants of mages out there. None of them which run Time Warp, but none of them are the quest mage.
Yeah, exactly, right?
Well, the quest mage is just very slow, and there's a lot of aggressive decks out there that'll kill you.
Yeah. Just, I guess, generally assessing the quest, it's kind of funny how people reacted initially, and even, I saw some comment even about our show highlights on Hearthpwn, where I said something about, you know, this deck, or this expansion is so great, because there's so many tools, and it allows us to do all kinds of different things. And then they were, like, I think, responding to just the quest, like, forcing us to go down certain routes. And it's like, guys, the quests are not generally good right now. There's only like a couple of them that people are actually using currently.
Oh, somebody complained about that?
Yeah, I think so. I think they were just like not getting that, you know. And it's like, yeah, the quest, it's so funny because when they first presented it to us, we were all worried, you know, that this was just basically staring us down this path that we have to build these decks because this is going to be the most powerful versions for each of these classes. But in reality, it hasn't been the case. You know, there's been a little bit of a mix, and I would say it's even heavier on not being quests. And that's really cool. You know, it's especially since the quests are legend. You know, so.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad quests are not mandatory.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Yeah.
I'm glad quests aren't that good, and I'm also, I actually really like the Rogue Quest deck. A lot of people, like, dislike that deck, and they think it's BS, and they want it banned or nerfed or whatever, and they talk about how it should be nerfed or whatever, and I'm like, first of all, this deck doesn't seem overpowered to me. It's like right on the edge, but I think it's okay. Like, it definitely loses to aggressive strategies. You can counter Questrobe by building aggro decks and go in phase. Well, you trade, but but building a board while trading and winning that way. And second of all, it's interesting gameplay. It's not like I play my one drop on two, my two drop on two. Mm-hmm. It's like a really complicated deck to play, and it's kind of interesting to play against as well. There's all sorts of shenanigans to think about, and it's awesome.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
I really, really, and this is probably one of the few circle jerks in the Hearthstone community that I legitimately cannot understand. The only thing that I might agree with is the fact that, well, when they get, you know, a crazy draw, they just beat you.
Yeah.
What deck doesn't do that? Like, I don't remember a deck in Hearthstone, like a Pirate Warrior that goes, turn one, the Zoth's first mate, coin, you know, South Sea deckhand, go face into Bloodstar Raider. Well, you have nothing.
Okay,
just
so
keep
I'll play devil's advocate here. I mean, I agree with you guys. I mean, I don't actually generally mind the deck anymore, or I understand just the necessity of it, and, you know, the and it's not easy to play too. Like, people think it's like super simple, but if you want to play it at maximum potential and not missing out on a turn, you know, or two, like actually killing them a turn or two before you are earlier than most people, then it really takes a lot of games with it and understanding mulligans and just how the plays work in the first two, three turns. But the thing is the deck just, it feels so bad when you lose to it though. And
why?
It just does. I mean, it's kind of like Pirate Warrior for some people, but with Pirate Warrior, I feel like it's a bit different because, you know, you can put a Galaka in there now, or you can, I don't know, before you could even play Ooze, and you felt like you had some kind of, you know, countering ability to it. Where with Rogue, you have to build a deck to counter Rogue instead of just like teching one thing to counter it, because you can't do anything to their cards really. I mean, you can affect it a little bit, you know, maybe. I don't know, a potion of madness, you know, that 1/2, you know, or some things like that. But
it's not going to beat the deck.
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to beat the deck too. But I'm just saying, like, there's maybe little things you can do to manipulate the.
No, you're right. I see what you're saying. I think what you're saying is it kind of has polarizing matchups. It's like J-Druid in that sense, in that it beats the heck out of control and slow decks, and it kind of always will, no matter what you do with your slower control deck. You're going to get farmed by Questrogue, mm-hmm. and it kind of loses more often than not against aggressive decks. And there's not a whole lot that can be done about it. But I think the actual gameplay is quite interesting. Like, when I play against the Questrogue, I see them screw up more than any other deck archetype, by far.
Absolutely.
People playing Questrogue are horrible at it. They are making mistakes left and right.
Yeah, you have to play 100 games with it. Like, maybe even more, actually, to really understand it. And I mean, the addition to Vanish, you know, I guess in the most recent versions, which most recent is probably like, you know, a week and a half now. I mean, I think plays into even more like lethal positions and things like that. So I think people don't give it enough credit. It's the same with a lot of aggro decks. I think aggro decks generally have never gotten the respect level from the standpoint of playing them right, and understanding that it's very unforgiving when it comes to errors. I would say the rogue quest is a bit more unforgiving then. You know, versus, say, you know, maybe aggro hunter in the past. Warrior's pretty forgiving too. I think there's a lot of damage variance. When you win by a lot, you know, whenever you're playing
that. Yeah, sure. But those are very different types of quests, right?
Yeah. But there have been aggro decks in the past, and I know, Zalea, you've played these decks like a lot, that, you know, it's made just to barely win. Like, and you can't miss a turn. Like, you can't miss a single bit of damage for you to actually have a good winning percentage with the aggro decks, and people don't see that. People are just like, oh, you just hit face.
Well, aggro rogue was like that a while back, where you missed a dagger hit and it was just GG.
Yep.
If you actually just hit face these days, you're just not gonna win a game.
Yeah, I know.
You're done.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
You're definitely trading early on.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, why don't we jump into our spotlight today, which is going to be the Shaman. And overall, what do you guys think about the Shaman before we dig into any decks?
I think Shaman's one of the weakest three classes, and I think it's still strong enough to easily hit Legend.
That says a lot, dude.
This is so good. Perfect summary. You know, this is how I would have described it as well. I think, and this speaks to the health of the game as a whole for casual-ish players, like the pleb that I am, who refuses to play what people view as tier one decks, because these are just no fun, even though they sometimes are. I feel like Shaman overall isn't a good spot. What I like the most is that there are a lot of different decks that you can play that will all of them get you to Legend. just compute the fact that there's not just, oh, you can reach legend with mid-range shaman or with aggro shaman or with control shaman. No, they can all get there, and different versions of each of these will get you there. A flood aggro, a straight-up face aggro, a jade mid-range, an elemental mid-range, an elemental control, a Nazoth no elemental control. Like, there's so many ways you can build shaman and get to legend with that I just... I like the class despite the fact that it's polluted the metagame for the past but not year, but
it doesn't feel like the same class though anymore.
No, it's That's totally different.
Yeah, it's just
a totem golem.
Exactly.
Thank God they're going strong.
Exactly. All right, so what deck should we start with just as a discussion point, and then we'll kind of go from there. Maybe elemental. Let's just start with the elemental shaman. And
sure.
Okay, here we go. So here's an elemental shaman. It's a pretty standard one. Like Noxious said, there are variances, lots of the different variances of it out there. You know, some folks play double Blaze Caller, you know, some people don't.
Double Flame Tongue,
some people don't. So, there's variances. But let's just talk about Elemental Shaman. I think this deck, starting off the expansion, everybody thought this deck was going to be the strongest deck. I think, or not everybody, but a large percentage.
Fire Warrior.
Okay, people weren't even saying Fire Warrior. Okay, a lot of people were like, oh my gosh, the Elemental Shaman looks freaking crazy amazing, and thank God the quest is not Elementals, blah, 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 blah. We didn't see that in the first week. The first week, in fact, I think Elemental Shaman was one of the weaker ones, given that, people hadn't teched it out. People hadn't really understood how to play it. What do you guys think about it now? Like, is power level...
It's not as strong as the top tier decks power level wise. You're going to get obliterated by Quest Rogue. Like, you just don't have the pressure you need to kill them before they assemble their quest and win on average. Like, sometimes you'll win a game, you go one drop into Flame Tongue, you might get there. But however, it does a pretty good job of beating aggressive decks, and there's a fair amount of aggressive decks out there. Like, if you want to play double portal, double storm with Tar Creepers and Tolvir Stone Shapers and Jade Lightning and Jade Claws, that's a lot of stuff for an aggro deck to get through. It's it does have a role in the metagame as an anti-aggro deck.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I feel like of all the shaman decks, I'm going to put this one at the weakest. Like, of all the existing builds that I've seen, I'm saying this build of elemental shaman is bad. It's just that I think elemental jade loses to value control decks because it doesn't hold board, because they tend to have good board clears, and it also doesn't particularly, like, it does okay in, like, against, as you said, a good chunk of the aggro decks out there, but I feel like the lack of ability to punish those aggro decks by going on the counter attack is a really big deal. So you're really looking to target mid-range and some of the slower aggro lists, which, you know, as much as I want, like, given that the two most popular aggro decks are Quest Rogue, if you were going to put it in aggro deck, I'll put it in that weird category. It's like a hybrid between combo and aggro and Pirate Warrior. I'm not sure this is necessarily the deck you want to be running. Has the Tugalaka Crawlers, by the way. You know, it helps a ton.
Yeah, that definitely does help. It's a bit too far in the middle, I guess you could say, in terms of being...
If I can respond to Noxious there, I think...
Sure.
I don't like how this particular list is built, and I think if you put another Flame Tongue in there and a couple Mana Tides, all of a sudden you have a lot more tools to win games against control decks, and it goes back to what Noxious was saying about having a way to punish other decks when you're actually ahead on board. Flame Tongue and Mana Tide are key tools for if you ever let me get ahead, all of a sudden I'm winning the game with this. Like, Tar Creeper on its own looks a little silly. You put three mana and you only have one attack. Like, what are you doing? But when you start realizing that taunt can be used to protect other minions and not just your face, it's Tar Creeper plus Flame Tongue, Tar Creeper plus Mana Tide. That's a real problem.
Yeah, and I mean, there's things from below in this deck too, so that would actually make sense to get discounts on that. Generally speaking, in this deck, you're not going to be toteming at all. So, I mean, things from below is probably going to be pretty expensive for you until super late game.
So, yeah, you don't have to play them. You can cut them if you want.
Yeah, I agree with that. Servant of Calamus, so that's one of the cards I felt like we should discuss too. And this is, you know, one of the cards that can give you additional value, right? If you're playing against control, especially if they keep drawing Calamus, which I've had that happen before, where they just get three Calamus and you're not expecting, I mean, the second one, much less the third one, and you're just like, crap. Yeah, I just died there. So,
when you discover Calamus against Freeze Mage, you just feel so good.
It does. Yeah. It does. I have to admit.
A point I want to make right now is that Freeze Mage is actually way more vulnerable than it used to be in the past. In the past, with Thalnos and Ice Lance and Emperor, it could potentially do 30 damage in a turn, especially with whatever that 4-mana 2-2 is called that gives plus 2 spell damage. But now Freeze Mage's Bird's potential is typically 15 with double Fireball plus either Frostbolt or the Medea's Valet. Mm-hmm. And occasionally it gets up to 18 if you get like a good Primordial Glyph on Frostbolt or something. But basically, they almost always burst for 15 in a turn and not more than that. And what that means is that healing is actually super effective at countering Freeze Mage, where previously they could play around healing by just bursting for larger amounts. So you can really target and bully Freeze Mages if that's something you want to do in like a Conquest tournament by just adding a little bit of healing to all your decks, throw a Forbidden Healing and a Stampeding Coda for Doomsayer in your Paladin, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. What a world we live in where Priest is now favored against Freeze Mage. Like, you know, I was...
crushes the matchup. Dude,
those are the funnest games because you get to Lyra the hell out of them. And it's
kind of amusing.
Fun.
Like, when you think back on the history of Hearthstone, it's just been... oh, I can't survive this. I'm just dead. And then you go, well, Alexstrasza, let's go Priest of the Feast, Power Shield, Shadow Word Death, Coin, Heal. It's like, what? And now they just throw spells at you like Wet Noodle over a few turns, and you just sustain them all and survive at the end of the day unscathed. So I think, you know, Freeze Mage is a very vulnerable, you know, class right now. And Shaman has the tools to heal, which I think makes its mid-range lists able to tech, as you said, right, against certain specific things, even without Servant. You know, Jinyu Water Speaker can be put in here if necessary. And
got the Guardian
I really
here
like
too.
That specific aspect of Shaman. They've got tools to do it.
Yes.
Now, on the topic of Servant of Kalamos, you know, circling all the way back, I think that card is single-handedly responsible for playing elementals at all in the meta. Like, without this card, elementals would just be like,
oh, it's garbage. Yeah,
you know, totally why garbage. Would I bother playing elementals? This is not a good, like, it doesn't do anything degenerate like Murlocs when they stack up. It's just, it's too fair. But this card says, I'm going to let you pick the elemental of your choice, and if your class happens to have one that you like, then you can also at a higher rate discover that and get an extra copy of it, which is also why I think Shaman is so fond of the Servant.
Yep. Yeah. Good analysis. Gotta agree with that.
Yeah, definitely. So you mentioned heal too. So I figured I'd bring up Hot Spring Guardian here.
Ooh, yeah.
And the fact that it's an elemental, it's actually important in this deck too, just to be able to you know, have the prerequisite of playing an elemental the previous turn, which you see on Servant of Kalamos. What do you guys think of this card? Has it been? I mean, it's essentially like a Earthring Farseer, but we're seeing this played more because of maybe the 4 health, the elemental. What do you guys think? The taunt too, right? It's pretty good.
Yeah, it's better than Earthring Farseer because 2/4 is a better stat line than 3/3. Like, health is generally better than attack value. And also the elemental is a relevant factor, right? It means you can discover it off of Servant of Kalamos and it procs your other elemental stuff. Yeah, it's a pretty good card. It's not like super sexy, but it does its job. I think it's generally worse than Tar Creeper. It's like your third and fourth Tar Creepers. But it is really important. The Open Cup I won this month, I guess, is I was targeting Freeze Mage. And somebody replied to my tweet was like, how do you target Freeze Mage with Shaman, you idiot? Like, you know, Freeze Mage is 90% favorite. I'm like, dude, no. I play my stuff. I heal through your damage and you lose like every time. I have 2 Hot Spring Guardian, 2 Jinyu Water Speaker, a Kalamos, and I can potentially discover more off Servant of Kalamos, right?
That's a lot.
The Servant can discover Kalamos or Hot Spring Guardian.
Right.
So it's like 7 potentially healing cards, and good luck. You're not going to kill me through that. I'm going to kill you.
Right. And that's the way to play Elemental Shaman, you know, thinking about just those tools and Kalamos and all the invocations you can use, because healing is a great one. I think Shaman could be the best healing class in the game outside of now that Priest has the miracle aspect of with the Priest. But man, Shaman, it literally has 5 different ways to heal itself. You know, with
healing wave is gone
I know. Imagine the head heal wave too.
Imagine that.
Who needs healing wave? You like the bodies.
Exactly. Hell of Zeal and
can confirm 4-mana 3/6. Right. I mean, that guy on average heals you more than a Priest of the Feast does in Priest. Like, that's just how good he is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And not to mention he can do other things too. That's crazy. Okay, well, let's talk about another deck here. And we have, I guess we have a couple lists with Control Shaman, which Control Shaman last week I felt like was, maybe towards the end of the week and maybe this weekend, I felt it was more like a flavor of the day or flavor, however short we get you know, these blips in the metagame. And so I figured out we'd bring a couple control decks here. One is more of the, I guess you could say Crusher, Ancestral Spirit, you know, just the Wide Eyes, and has Nuzlocke too. Version, and then the other one is Noxious, who has another Nuzlocke one, but you actually have Spirit Echo, which is a really cool card. It's a card that I was playing with too. I should include this here. I forgot to add Echo of Spirit. That's a cool card. But why don't you talk about your Echo one first?
Sure. So one of the things about the Spirit Echo Shaman that's showcased is the fact that it's running the Elemental package as well as the Nuzlocke package. Mm-hmm. And I'm running Things from Below as well because I chose to run double Manatite for draw. Now, I've seen a lot of people build Spirit Echo Shaman, and I've seen a lot of people build build it with the Elemental package and without. And the core, I think, aspect of the deck's efficiency, or efficacy rather, is the fact that you're running Igneous Elemental early game with Deathrattle that gives you, like, it feeds you bodies for Nuzlocke later on, and you run a single copy of White Eyes. On its own, that's enough to get you a good Nuzlocke. Like, you really don't need to go insane on the, oh, I'm going to play White Eyes and Faceless Manipulator it and then Ancestral Spirit it to get an extra, you know, five copies of it. Like, that's all fun, but at the end of the day, it's a little bit slower of a game plan, and while it works, I'm not sure how consistently you get it done without getting punished by a single transformation effect. So I like the ability to just not rely on White Eyes too much and just at least get some early game stuff from the Igneous. And really, it comes down to the double Serpent of Kalamos working in conjunction with Nuzlocke and the Spirit Echo that can bring back, and this is the key point, it can bring back in against aggro taunts that you need, against something like Freeze Mage, you can bring back Genie Water Speakers, you can bring back Hot Spring Guardians, you've got Devolve against the Murloc package, you've got AoE against that stuff as well, and you have enough removal in the form of Volcano, Lightning Storm, and Maelstrom to clean up everything. So I feel like it's a very well-rounded deck. But
yeah. I have a couple questions. First of all, have you ever had your Spirit Echo devolved or vanished?
I've had it once on Devolve, and it wasn't really that big a deal.
Okay.
I got it vanished for sure. That happened twice, I think. And while crippling, it's no worse than Ancestral Spirit.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same thing.
So the next question is, what all are we reviving with in Nuzlocke? We get back White Eyes, we get back Thalnos. It doesn't work with Spirit Echo, right? And you get stuff off of Servant of Kalamos. Sometimes.
You get double Igneous Elemental from Nuzlocke as well. Yeah. For what it's worth. It's extra little 1/2 is the trigger. But the idea is just you value game with the Nuzlocke at the very end. Like, honestly, Nuzlocke with a single White Eyes is like...
It's enough, yeah.
It's almost enough.
You're getting 10 tens back, I mean, too. So you're getting value just purely...
Wait, does the 10-10 have Death Rattle?
No, it doesn't. No. But you're still loading yourself. But
yeah, you're just getting the 5-5 White Eyes back and Thalnos, and that's mostly it. And then an Igneous Element, okay.
Yeah. But that 10-10 is 5 mana, and then you can even Spirit Echo those things.
On the flip side, when you Spirit Echo your White Eyes, then you get another White Eyes to replay, and then it brings that extra White Eyes. So, like, occasionally you do get, the miracle dream of, hey, I have, five copies of the same thing. One synergy that I'd like to highlight is Thing from Below with Spirit Echo is pretty damn amazing. It's a 0 mana 5-5 afterwards.
Yep.
Initially, I wasn't running Things from Below, but I was also not running Manatize for draw. And I ended up phasing away from that, putting one Stonehill Defender for an extra White Eyes or Thing from Below to, again, work with the Spirit Echo, both of which are fueling kind of the late-game combo. Mm-hmm. Deck feels solid. There's a lot of flex spots, honestly, though. Like, you can remove one Storm, you can remove one Devolve, or just both of them if you feel like you need more mid-game. I really, really like the archetype. It's fantastic to play.
The card's really fun, Spirit Echo. It's kind of like the Warrior one. It's just this one was, this one doesn't have a prerequisite to it. It just gives everything Death Rattle.
They can respond to it, on the flip side.
They can, but, I mean, that's true for a lot of different cool effects. But I've even had times where even totems and stuff that I got back in my hand were useful in some way, like whether it's like a taunt totem or I had Acolyte of Pains that worked out pretty well for me, too. So I played around a lot with it, but didn't end up putting in this other one. This other one is just, like you were saying, it's more of a traditional control shaman that you've seen with Ancestral. But it was strong, I would say, against when Pally was when the Murloc Paladin was popular. But ever since the Murloc Paladin's kind of transitioned into a different type of paladin, then this deck's gotten a lot worse in the last few days or last week. So
they should both probably win against paladin, though. I think they both farm paladin. Like, Volcano is such a soul crusher when they're trying to flood the board at all, because they're like usually trading okay and efficiently early game, and then they're jamming a huge board mid game, and just getting a single clear on them means they then have to replenish with more cards, and their Tyrians get hexed. There are some keepers don't accomplish all that much, so you usually have the ability to counter them, regardless of which control shaman list you're running, I say.
You know what sucks about Volcano sometimes is I always play Hell of Zeal to heal up, and then because I play Hell of Zeal, I end up killing less on the board. It's just like,
That's the thing. I don't get Hell of Zeal in this deck aside with Volcano. You should play it maybe with Storm.
Yeah.
But I would not play it alongside
Volcano. But I've been in positions where I've had to, you know, I've had to heal up because I'm so far down.
Seems good.
So you haven't played much Control Shaman, Zalay, at all?
Not really.
Okay.
No.
I want my HCT points.
It's not aggressive enough for.
I've played some wacky stuff. This is just not one of the wacky decks I've tried yet.
Yeah. No, there's a lot of things you can play.
The whole white eyes and the Zoth thing always just kind of upsets me. It makes me angry. I don't want to. I don't know.
It's such good value, though, man.
That's just not how I see it.
I know, right?
I'm not into 5-mana 5/5s.
Yeah,
I know. You're looking for like 4-mana 7/7s.
At least. Yeah, that's my kind of stat line.
They're all so good. You know, one thing that sucks is just, the rogue quests. I mean, there's so many things that are bad playing against a rogue quest when you're a shaman. Like, Devolve doesn't do anything. Hex doesn't do anything.
That is one of the issues,
garbage.
When you're playing against the rogue quest, it's like it's real simple. You gotta kill them. They're gonna finish the quest and then beat you. So you better kill them before that too much of that stuff happens.
Well, it's funny because some things work against the minions and some things don't. You know, like so transformation doesn't work at all. And having devolve obviously be in hex be transformation does really really hurts. But overall, these are fun. If you guys ever want to try out fun decks, definitely give these a try right now. And then we've got a couple other decks here. The Flood deck that Soleil was mentioning a second ago. And then we also have a Jade deck that I wanted to show. They're not necessarily in the same archetype, but they both have Jade cards in it. And it might be good to just kind of compare. So the one on the left, so this is one that I got off of Tempest Storm here. And it's your traditional Jade deck with obviously some of the new cards added because some of the other ones went away. So Spirit Echo's in this too, which you know allows you to get bigger Jade. And this is one of the decks I tried Spirit Echo in also, this type early on. And it's nice. It allows you to get maybe like two more Jade cards than you would normally get. And if you can get like Aya, you know, that's pretty awesome too. But overall, I don't know if it's stronger. I mean, I think the gauge, the power level of everything has changed, you know, with everything coming out. So what do you think about just the traditional Jade Shaman?
I haven't seen any Jade Shaman builds that are that strong lately. Jade Druid has, apparently there's a pretty strong Jade Druid list out there. But Jade Shaman, I don't know. I haven't seen anything that really grips me and makes sense as a reason to go in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
Like Jade Druid was always a control killer archetype, and he got some really good anti-aggro tools. Jade Shaman, I don't know. What does the Farsight do in this list? That's something I haven't thought about. I guess you set up Spirit Echo turns.
Yeah, that's anything you get with this that is Jade related allows you to get a Spirit Echo that's going to be good, right? Like where you're able to get like an extra Aya or a Jade Chieftain.
Or
so
the
it's,
Spirit,
Yeah, I mean, any AoE you already know is good. The issue with that, of course, is that it's kind of slow in some cases, but like Shaman is currently running into issues with card draw and value sometimes, which is why you often have to go either completely all in or make these weird draw choices.
Yeah.
I find that a lot of Shamans are stuck like making weird cycle choices to compensate.
Yeah, and Spirit Echo is a weird way to do that too, right? I mean, it's a conditional way to do that, so it's not guaranteed all the time. And you know, if Spirit Echo just gets you one card, I don't know. It's debatable whether it doesn't even matter what card you get. It's still debatable whether it's good or not. So, you're right. I think the card draw is actually an issue for them right now. Where in the past it wasn't. You know, it was good enough with Acolyte and Manatide and Azure Drake and Dominus. So, yeah.
So speaking of weird card draw, the next deck has two Cult Masters, Flood Shaman.
Yeah, exactly. Let's talk about that.
This deck has a lot of room for refinement, I want to say, first of all. I only played this deck for a little while. I climbed from rank 3 to rank 2, gained probably about 5 stars off the deck, and then I was like, God, I'm tired of trading. Like, it's really fun at first, but after a while, it's mentally exhausting trying to figure out how to trade optimally on board, considering all of the potential AoEs you have to play around turn after turn after turn. Game after game after game. It's like a lot of thinking. But so yeah, the deck, the cards do two things in the deck. One, get ahead. Two, exploit the fact that you're ahead. So cards to get ahead, you have Argent Squire, Bloodsail Corsair, Firefly, Patches, Jade Claws, Maelstrom Portal, Tar Creeper, Jade Lightning, and Thing from Below. And then cards that reward you for being ahead. Direwolf Alpha, Flame Tome, Primal Fin Totem, Manatide Totem, Cult Master, and Bloodlust. So, and then also there's like the whole Taunt plus Totem synergy thing from Below, and Taunt Totem and Tar Creeper are protecting your high threat minions like the Totems and the Direwolf Alpha. And that's basically what the deck does. Just get ahead and then punish them for letting you be
this,
ahead.
This is the deck that I was talking about, guys, earlier when I said very low margin of error and just barely winning some games. I feel like this is the type of deck. Unless I'm wrong. Do you win by landslides or are you barely winning? Okay.
Sometimes they get run over. Other times it's like, man, this feels really good. And then they play some stuff and you're like, man, my Direwolf Alpha and Cultmaster are just not very strong cards here, are they? It's like, I'm playing some bad cards on this deck.
Right. It's one of those decks that you like. It's kind of one. I want to say it's like the way you're building it. It's one of those first drafts where you just go like, all right, let's put, you know, redundancy, double Flame Tongue, double Direwolf, and you jam the obvious double Bloodlust. And then I've seen a lot of people move away from the whole double Lust shenanigan. I'm still not sure if it's wrong because it feels pretty solid to me in those flood lists, especially.
Yeah.
But it's the Cold Master that, you know, got my attention earlier, right, when we saw it, and it's kind of fascinating to see that card just kind of comes in and out as the aggro decks specifically get refined. People kind of choose to include it or not. And this is a decent fit for it, given how much flooding you're doing.
Yeah, I like it. I mean, I definitely like Bloodlust in this. You know, you can possibly achieve something similar with more, you know, Murloc and Megasaur. You know, that's kind of like a similar type of thing. But if you're not going to do Murloc, I think this is pretty interesting. Like Primal Fin Totem in this too. You know, I like that card a lot. That I don't get a chance to play it enough, but that card, I feel like from the standpoint of, you know, filling the board and just creating that very, like you said, flood type of strategy is going to be extremely good. It's so cheap, man. It's like 2 mana. When something that in the past would be,
you can coin it out on turn 1.
I know. Yeah. That used to be 3 mana, you know, guys. So they
on
made
the top
that
of the Primal Fin Totem. You could put the Finja package in this deck. It's something I considered and didn't go with, but it's something worth exploring. Just Finja, 2 bluegills, and 2 war leaders.
The idea is
the Primal Fin Totem is making Murloc, so the war leader is really good in this deck, or much better than in other Finja package decks. Mm-hmm. And then the bluegill with Flame Tongue is a nice synergy as well, right? Like anything with charge plus Flame Tongue is nice. So maybe a Finja package is good in this deck.
Finja package seems just to
that's
work
interesting.
Like the water package seems to just
The water package is good in every aggro deck. I mean, wait, let me rephrase that. It's okay in every aggro deck.
Yeah, it's okay.
Yeah, it's okay. Yeah. All right, I like that, man. This is definitely cool. And how many pirates you have? I guess you have 2 pirates, right? Just to get patches.
Plus patches.
Yeah.
Plus so patches. 3 in total.
All right.
Yeah.
What's your winning percentage like on that with that thing?
I have no idea. It's from rank 3 to rank 2.
Okay.
A few hours
so
on
something,
stream.
Something
it was,
more
it was
than
pretty decent.
Then. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so give that a try out, guys. And we've pretty much listed just everything across the board. Aggro, we got a mid-range here in Jade, and we got Control, and I mean mid-range and Elemental too. So Shaman, not the same class as we've known before, but still very rich with different tools. And I mean, I think that Shaman is still maybe 1 or 2 cards in the next expansion for being super strong again. So
The same way that it was at the very least.
Not the same
it's
way
not gonna
it was.
Be a broken 1-drop into a broken 2-drop. There's going to be some nuance to it, which I think is going to feel a lot better.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's all the decks that we had today, right? Anything else you guys want to talk about in terms of Shaman and anything you love?
I think we covered it.
Yeah, I think so too.
What I love most about Shaman is the Tunnel Charge and Totem are gone. So it's It's like totally different than what it used to be. God, thank you.
Thank you.
There's no word to express how grateful we are for the rotation of the Totem Golem as well as the Tunnel Trog. Those cards, man. Was there anything else that felt oppressive from that era?
Well, Tuskar Totemic was 3-2, but they got nerfed, so it's fine.
Honestly, Tuskar might not be as bad right now, you know, if those other two didn't exist. It was just because they had a 1-2 and a 3 drop that were ridiculous, all back to back to back, that made it so tough. Okay, well, anyways, let's move on to just a shout out to our iTunes folks as well as our patrons. Want to give a shout out to the folks that do listen to Value Town on iTunes and leave 5-star reviews for us, helping us out with just folks finding Value Town by searching for Hearthstone and things like that. We've been getting a lot of reviews, which is super awesome. You guys are really coming out and, you know, helping us out. Stu Platt, Spade 87, Sparta and Dogs, Scurvy 5, and Anono Double Payback. Thanks so much for the latest ratings, as well as just the nice comments that you guys leave too. And if you guys want to help out the show and you guys do listen to it on iTunes, you can do the same. Just, it takes like a minute or two. Just hop on iTunes, look for a Value Town, and then you can just leave us a nice rating there, as well as Google Play too. We're on Google Play, and there's their own rating system there too. You can do that. Of course, we wouldn't be anywhere without our patrons. We have a Patreon set up for Value Town, which is patreon.com/valuetown, which you see right here. And these are the guys that support us. They make the show happen each and every week. And want to give a shout out to some of the folks, our legendary producers, Mike T and Richard S, of course, and then a few others: David T, Devin W, Ed H, Jim G, Graham S, Zoxand, Alex K, Amish TV, and Ninja Fada. Thanks so much for doing that. And lately we've been doing these Deck of the Weeks too with the patrons, which I do this kind of mini recording where we only do audio right now. But the Deck of the Week that we did last week was the Paladin. And we had about 10 people give their feedback. So it was a lot of fun. About 5 people live. So, you know, we did like about a 50 minute type of recording. And this week we're going to be doing the Priest, which is Lyra. You can check out the post on patreon.com/valuetown to get some more information on that. But if you guys want to help out, guys, definitely check out the Patreon. And, you know, it's one of those things where if you got a quarter or 50 cents or a dollar and you want, you know, for each of the episodes, it's kind of how it's set up. Think about throwing that in here for something that you love, because it helps us out in a big way in continuing doing this just indefinitely. Thanks so much. We're just barely short of Milestone. We had so many new patrons this week, but we're still just barely short of Milestone. So Zalay, you got off the hook for Smilestone.
You nailed it.
Oh, no, that put a smile on my face.
It put a smile on your face, exactly. Okay, so why don't we talk about a bit of news here? We've got Hearthstone was nominated for a Google Play Award, which, for those of you wondering, what the heck's Google Play? It's the Android market for just mobile games. So it's basically nominated for a mobile award. And I'm not sure if it was nominated in the past for a Google Play Award, but if not, it's so funny that 2017 they chose as the year that it would be nominated, given that Hearthstone's been around for a while now.
Well, somebody was tired of Shaman at Google. They're just like, well, oh, fucking Tunnel Trog, that sucks. And they're like, well, Google was pretty neat. All right, okay, let's go.
Oh, that's hilarious. It could be, man. Shaman was holding back even awards. That's how bad it was. What were you going to say, Zalay?
Oh, I don't recall. I mean, I guess, yeah, some comment about 2017's been a good year so far because of Un'Goro, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Pretty happy.
Yeah, it's crazy. Just one release and get nominated for awards. That's the life, baby.
So here's a question before we move on. Zalay, would you say that this is the best state Hearthstone's ever been in, or have there been metagames that you much preferred over this?
I mean, it's hard for me to say anything is better than a Grim Patron metagame, right?
Ah, oh, I see. Okay.
God.
Oh, my. It's hard.
But for me, the general principle is what I'm looking for out of a game like Hearthstone is stuff to think about, stuff to keep me interested and engaged. And it's doing a pretty good job. And it's not so much because the Un'Goro expansion is so great. Like, yeah, Un'Goro expansion is pretty great. But I think the best thing about Hearthstone right now is just that rotation happened. You know, they nerfed 6 cards to the Hall of Fame, and they got rid of 3 entire sets. And that gives that just there's so much space opened up to play with the new cards because of those old cards going away. You know, doing the same thing over and over and over and over again gets old and boring and stale. That's not fun. What's fun is novelty and new and different and exciting. And mm-hmm. and we get that because they got rid of so many old cards.
All right, fair enough. Yeah, good answer.
Next up on the list, we've got DreamHack Austin, which both of you guys are going to be at this weekend. Noxious Casting, Insulate playing. And for those of you who maybe haven't checked out just the player pool there, it is disgusting. Like, it's going to be one of the hardest fields I've seen, actually, in Hearthstone, at least this year, maybe in a long time ever. I don't know. Zalay, you saw the list. What do you think?
I didn't look at the list. I just assumed it was going to be a killer tournament.
It was a killer tournament last year, and this year there's even more top pros at the tournament. So expect some, just really, really high-skilled games just throughout the groups. And I forget how it works, Noxious. Do they show – they just show one they have two people go on the stage, right? Like, that maybe have some type of matchup. I forget how it works.
I'm not even sure there's a stage. I don't recall there being a stage. I just remember them playing their games, and we would spectate them from there because it's a Swiss round, right? Like, it's a massive Swiss round ongoing at all times, and that makes it kind of difficult to cast, but production's been on point last year just to keep track of matches. That's where we saw Terrence actually just cropping out of the background of the Hearthstone scene. That was kind of fantastic. Shocky took it, if I recall. Yeah.
Shocky got his first title, baby.
First major, man. You got to nail it. And he was just like, I didn't know Nazoth Paladin was going to be good, exactly. But I guess it was good. Then the following week, it died off because it was bad after all.
he got the mileage from it, man. Totally got all
He did. So anyway, it was a cool event last year, and I expect no less from this one. And frankly, like, the whole... it's kind of, there's sometimes a little bit of downtime due to the fact that we can't follow every single match and we need to have our, competitors lined up, and sometimes Swiss rounds take longer because we're waiting on one guy in the back who hasn't finished his Taunt Warrior mirror match, and it's just one of those things. However, big upside, the current metagame is at the very least faster than it used to be, in that even control games end quickly compared to the control games of yore, when you had a Nazoth Paladin versus Control Warrior, you played it out because you had to, but you didn't want to, but you did. And sometimes, things.
We're going to see some Warrior. You can guarantee. We'll see Warrior.
I think what you just said there is the whole point behind the Warrior quest is now there's a way to control Warrior is a thing. You can play it and it can be good, but its win condition isn't fatigue anymore. Control Warrior actually ends its games, right? Like, somebody's going to die.
As opposed to letting fatigue do the job. You have a win condition that's not just you putting a Grom Hellscream. And as much as it pains me to say, right, like, I praised the one aspect of Jade that I praise is the fact that the face of control is looking like not fatigue. That's like the only aspect of the Jade stuff that I liked. And it's probably the only aspect of the Taunt Warrior that I like. As far as linearity, like, that's another topic entirely. But I like the control decks are given tools, to tackle match length a bit better. Because, 40-minute sleep fests of who draws the bonus first and control wire mirrors was just...
Oh, it's still going to be decided by 50-50 fireballs. Just, don't get me wrong. It's still going to happen. It happened at last year's DreamHack 2 with Ragnaros a few times. So, we were going to see... we're gonna see Quest Warrior versus Quest Warrior in some of these matchups too, but it's a little bit less linear, at least, and with the Control Warrior that we've seen now.
Is it?
The Control Warrior is a little bit less linear because there's not as many taunt minions in it. I mean, there's a few less taunt minions.
Oh, you mean the old control?
No, the current one. The current one that's like the quest that's a little bit more control oriented than just your throw every single taunt in the deck.
Oh, you mean the Armorsmith, quad Armorsmith list?
Yeah, that kind of list. So I've been
sure. All right, it's slightly less linear than
slightly.
But... all right, I like the word linear. By the way, it's a really good. As a caster, you need a list of terms you can use that will not trigger Blizzard. And I think this one is one of the most fantastic ones.
Curbstone's pretty great too.
Well, I mean, linear is one of those terms you can use to say it's boring, right? Because Jade is a very linear deck, and people understand what you mean when no one's saying it. It's like,
easy
you're not
play. Boring.
This is a good draw, not a top deck, right? It's never a top deck. It's a good draw, and so this is one of those
We're getting a casting listing right now.
From Noxious. I'm learning a lot.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. It's not even something that Blizzard hides, right? I mean, they've never come out and said it, but the point is, we all as casters know that there's something about it that's you just can't say.
And, so you feeling good going into it, Zalay? I mean, Austin treated you well last year. I remember you were like 5-0 or something in groups or.
Yeah, I finished top 16 last year. Last year I was not trying to win. I was
really.
How's that work?
I remember this. I had other priorities
at the time.
Yes, yes, I remember this.
And then I was like, "Oh, this is frustrating. I keep winning." this year, I am trying to win, so I'll probably get obliterated in the first three rounds or something. I don't know.
It's funny. No, my
decks are pretty good. I'm pretty well prepared. I like what I'm doing. I think I've got a good shot at it.
All right. Good deal. Yeah, DreamHack Austin last year. I'm kind of bummed I'm not going this year, but DreamHack Austin, I remember it was one of the first tournaments where I could just see how intense, you know, just the environment was. You know, just the tables, you guys sitting across from each other. Obviously, a lot of folks that I'm friends with and know, and you know, just kind of seeing it in person is pretty cool. It's very, very cool getting a chance to see you guys going ahead, especially when you have two friends going against each other. You're like, oh man, this is brutal. This is definitely going to be tough to root for. Who do I root for, you know, in this matchup? But hopefully we'll see another breakout like Terrence had last year too.
I'm hoping so. Yeah. I mean, it's
when's
one
it start?
Of those things about...
Is it Friday or Saturday?
What day are we now? We're Wednesday, so yeah. It should start on, I think Friday is when. The
okay.
Day yeah, I think it's Friday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, right?
Yep. It's 3 days.
Oh, it's 3 days. Friday. Wow.
All through the Sunday.
Yeah, it's kind of.
I'm trying to convert
days,
like time zones, and I'm just like, yo, I'm actually just 2 hours away from that place. Like in terms of
not that bad,
time zones, there's no difference. Maybe even 1 hour. So yeah, it's gonna be fine.
Get some barbecue when you're there if you have time. Last time I couldn't even eat a meal with you, Nox. You're so freaking. You guys were so busy last year. That's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. It was. It's a good event though. Like. Mm-hmm. It's so cool because there's often events where like you're casting the game and then, you know, during the break, what you want to do is take a break. But during DreamHack Austin last year, all I wanted to do was sit in the audience and watch nonstop. So you always pay attention, but you don't like you're not heavily focused. But this time around is just, yeah, I'm pretty sure I'm going to be watching everything.
This is like the first big event with like the most chaotic metagame ever. So it's going to be sweet to see like what works, what's the best, who's winning with what. It's definitely going to be some surprising stuff and some new stuff.
Flood Shaman.
Never know. you never know.
Zalay's face just tells the story.
Giving away something already.
Maybe somebody else can figure that one out. I'm not bringing Shaman this time.
Okay, well, anyways, guys, tune in to that this weekend and, you know, root for your favorite players. So right now, real quick, I guess a word from our sponsors, Ting. Again, Ting is sponsoring this episode, and they have this cool video that we're going to be showing here. So enjoy this, guys. Oh, that's the wrong one. Oh, my God. What happened here? I got this
production
video.
Production value.
Whoops. My bad, guys. My bad. I need to. I think I loaded up the wrong presentation. I know. That's the last of that sponsor. That's the last of that sponsor, right?
Ooh, yeah.
Oh man, but
better get that $25 discount.
$25. Exactly. Why don't we take a quick question from Q&A before I get this video loaded up here? We've got Davin P, who's a patron, and he wanted to ask: other than Purify, which older cards get the biggest boost from Un'Goro?
Oh, that's a good question. That's a really good question.
Yeah. I'm going to go with Stone Dust Boar. Done.
Oh.
Okay.
I'm passing your move.
Stone Dust Boar. That's a good example, right?
Okay.
Because Questro really just puts a lot of garbage cards to good use. And that's part of what I love about Questro, right? It's like all of a sudden you have to look through your collection. All right, what nonsense is suddenly playable now? I put Shield Bearer in there, and I legitimately think that's a good card that belongs in Questro. Like Shield Bearer. Yeah.
There was a big, long discussion about that card, I think, amongst some people.
I stand by the Shield Bear. I still think it's right.
I think it's better than Voodoo Doctor.
Yes.
I agree.
Let's see. What other cards? I mean, trying to stay away from Questro because there's a lot of garbage cards that really benefited from that. How about Murloc War Leader? That one's popping up all over the place, right? Like the Murloc Paladins really use it well, and not just that, but the Finja decks are pretty popular.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually.
Hungry Crab is the sweetest.
Hungry
answer.
Crab for sure. Yeah, we just talked about one, right? Hungry Crab. I would say. I mean, we had some of the secret the Paladin secrets kind of come back too, but that was returned from Secret Paladin days too.
Through Hydrologists, right? That I haven't really seen them.
I'm trying to think of cards like that.
How about Medivh's Valet? That one popped up all of a sudden thanks to Arcanologist.
Right. I was going to say, like, if we look at expansions as opposed to the classic set, right, we're looking at some of the secret decks in Mage. And, like, we've seen secret decks, and we've also seen the secret package with the Arcanologist with Medivh's Valet.
Yeah.
So while Medivh's Valet was good in, like, aggro freeze for a while when it came out, I feel like that deck didn't perform as well as some of the other meta calls that existed back then. But now Medivh's Valet is pretty much a staple in Mage. In every deck that runs Arcanologist, you're like, yeah, 2 mana, deal 3, get a body. Yep, seems pretty solid to me. Ice Block has never been easier to get. And as a result of that, Medivh's Valet is live pretty much all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that probably covered. There's probably one or two that were just completely missing.
Divine Spirit.
Right? Divine Spirit.
And any Priest card, because it's just a much more viable class.
Oh my gosh. but
the truth is, like, Divine Spirit Interfire.
Same thing for any Hunter card, actually.
In a ton of decks. Like, honestly, Divine Spirit Interfire is actually playable all the way up to, like, top 100. So that's interesting to think about.
But that's really good. I mean, the fact that we're even bringing this question up and there's like a list of cards that we're talking about, that's smart design. You know, I've said it a lot recently. When you can bring back older cards to be played in the metagame, that's just great. You know, this frame of mind or this way of thinking about things where, oh, cards are just bad, guys. You know, like we have to include some bad cards in these decks and they'll just never be played, you know, in standard. And that's how it goes. You know, now that we're introducing, you know, these type of cards that, you know, give us random cards, you know, and force us to play them, they make for very, very interesting dynamics at times. Maybe we can talk about cards that we get from Free From Amber. You get any old cards from Free From Amber that's just like, wow, this actually works.
Nosdormu. I've done Nosdormu a lot.
Okay, Nosdormu.
A whole lot, actually.
Snipe their bathroom break with it.
Yeah.
I've still never picked Boogeyman or Boogie Monster or whatever. I have to say,
good on you.
Good on me.
Maybe your Noggin Fogger becomes a bit more.
Oh, I totally had a Noggin Fogger play that saved my butt against Rogue. Yeah, totally could not attack. He kept attacking his own minions. It was so great, man.
Wait, you can attack your own minions?
No, he has to attack my stuff.
You have to attack. Yeah, targets have to be legal, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are you sure?
Targets have to be legal.
I'm 150% sure.
Oh, whoa, it has to be
that's
legal.
That's not even possible.
Right.
Now I don't trust you.
No. It was spells, right? Spells are legal, right?
Yeah, spells.
Yeah, it was spells.
It
was spells.
Just has to be legal targets. So your spells can target your
minions.
Yeah,
that's what it was. That's what it was. He never had actually had a... he never had actually had
his minion. Backstabs his own guy.
Not backstab. It was like eviscerate.
Eviscerates his own guy. Yeah.
Exactly. So that was...
Shadow stab the wrong target. You're like, Shadow stab the floor. Oops.
Yeah, I mean, Shadow Stepping the wrong target is probably not that bad, given that.
That's pretty bad.
It's
pretty bad.
I guess. I mean, not when you're in the position I was in. I was basically dead, and I just got Noggenfogger and threw it on the board. So it was kind of interesting. But, all right. I love that commercial, man. That commercial is so good. But yeah, check out 10 Guys if you are looking for just a carrier or a mobile service that will not overcharge you for data or only charge you for the amount of data that you use and also messaging that you use. And if you don't want contracts, don't want to be, you know, nailed down to anything else, Ting is going to be the place for you. Go check it out at value.ting.com or valuetown.ting.com. Both of them work, so you can get some more details there.
I feel like you probably just saved me a couple hundred bucks. So thanks, Jam Man.
You and Trump, man. I think you and Trump are
this is good.
Both. Yeah.
No, I too. I mean, honestly, they were in Canada, I would take them in a split second.
Oh, that's true.
I would take up on that offer in a split second. I am like this data plan I've got is trying to cover like international, but I barely travel these days. I could just have the extra line.
Yeah.
Which would be very, very good.
Yeah, I don't really Yeah, I don't really do that much on my phone anymore, to be honest. Like, I used to do a lot. I mean, maybe outside of, you know, Pokemon or something like that with my son.
Back when Chanman walked the earth, now he's locked up in his room.
I know, I'm just
making podcasts all day.
Exactly, exactly. All right, we got more questions here. We got Johannes von S. He says, considering that Murloc decks have gained gained some playability, what do you think about the changes that were done to the Warleader some time ago? He buffed enemy Murlocs before. Was it necessary, or did it oversimplify the mechanic? Oh my god, that reminds me of Hyena too. Back when you could buff your Hyena with beasts. Oh man, it would be crazy if Murloc Leader could buff both sides of Murloc. That would be insane.
I mean, I would honestly not like it for one reason. It reminds me a lot of the we had a portion of time where anything can happen. Was it worked that way, where if they played theirs first, you played yours, and you just killed them in one shot.
That's right.
Instead of having to use two anythings.
I thought that was better. I thought that was more interesting.
It's more interesting. The issue with it right now is that a lot of the Murloc packages end up running for tempo, and so it becomes a matter of who plays the first Murloc. Oh, I did. I guess you're screwed. And that's when I run into issues with it, right? Where if you're the first on the board, then you benefit from the enemy playing the mirror match the most, and there's not much they can do about it, really, in the decks that exist as we know them. Especially not in the form of auras. Like, you can't even play Cold Lights here. That was also Murloc wide, if I recall correctly. So you would buff their Murlocs as well, and became a bit clunky.
Yeah, I don't know about that one.
You actually liked it better when it.
Oh yeah, because
that's surprising.
It created an interesting standoff. Standoffs are more interesting to me than races. So. When your Warleader buffed the enemy Murlocs, you couldn't play any Finn because then they would play any Finn and kill you. And they couldn't play any Finn for the same reason. So it's kind of a standoff where you have to find some way to, you know, get an advantage, get a little bit ahead, get some chip damage or something like that. It was really complicated to win. Whereas now, without the downside of your Warleaders buffing their stuff, it's more of just a race where you just play your any Finn as fast as possible and kill them. And that's just like, all right, who drew into their stuff first? They just play it, and then they just win. It's more interesting when there's a standoff and you have to find a way to get small edges and all that kind
of
stuff.
So you would like, it's like a battle of Blessing of Kings and Spike Ridge Steez and Megasaurs. Like, you wait for Megasaur before playing Warleader so you can actually get some extra Divine Shields on your guys so you can trade into theirs and then maintain the board that way. As opposed to just jamming the Warleader on a board, like, on its own.
Oh, okay, I don't know about that stuff. I was just talking about in the anything games.
You're just talking about,
games, I agree with you. But, like, I'm thinking about the Temple Murloc stuff. Like, if I look at it from today's perspective, I feel like the Murloc matchups would be super, super volatile. Like, can you even envision, like, a Murloc Paladin versus a Murloc Paladin when the first guy to play a Murloc just gets...
Doesn't it balance out the matchup more when your Warleaders buff the enemy minions? Because it means... Like, the guy who has a Warleader in play is the guy who's ahead, and so by adding a downside to your Warleader, making the matchup more fair, like, all of a sudden the guy who's behind might be able to bluegill the opponent's Warleader to, you know, catch up some.
Well, there's definitely some danger of playing stuff on the board first, so there is that dynamic that's not there right now, but...
Okay.
I don't know. I feel like it'd be triggering. I don't know. That's my initial reaction to it, but the more and more you talk about it, the more and more, you know, I can't think of a scenario where it would be just like really, really bad. I mean, back when the Hyena was doing it, I remember how triggered people used to get with that. But
well, remember when Eagle Hornbow worked that way?
that was just ridiculous.
And I feel like, you just, sometimes.
Okay, so I think Warleader is probably the least crazy out of those things. So it could be, I mean, I think they could revert it and maybe it would be interesting, but it's definitely, I think, easier to understand the way it is right now. Okay, Wayne H asks, there's been a few posts on Reddit recently about how some people really like the idea of crab type cards being part of Hearthstone, and by crab I mean a card that is designed to be a hate card for a specific tribe. Do you think Blizzard should make more of these? Or do you think adding too many hate cards is a bad idea? Thoughts? So hate cards are basically counter cards, right? Tribal counter cards. What do you guys think?
I like hate cards. I do generally think hate cards are a good thing. Like, I like having answers to stuff. But I don't like how swingy the answers are. I wish they were a little bit more powerful on the vanilla stats and a little bit less powerful on the battle cry. That's the hatred portion. So it's more like more playable across the board and just kind of like punishes the one deck a little bit. So like the part where the minion's actually growing while destroying the enemy minion seems excessive to me, you know.
Right.
Maybe if it just grows or just destroys an enemy minion and the vanilla stats are a little bit closer to being playable, so it's not quite so embarrassing when you're not cued into the right match.
Like, here's the question, right? Like, does Golaka Crawler, when it works, need to get buffed? Like, the general answer to that is no. Like, if it kills something, you're already happy. Like, it's all right. Yeah. That it doesn't.
I mean, Golaka Crawler is crazy overvalued. I mean, it's crazy value whenever you're playing against it.
The thing is, it's funny to think about that because if you look at the way it's designed, it feels like Blizzard looked at the meta and said, well, we don't want them to just look at this and say, oh, here's a pirate hate card. We want them to say, here's a really okay vanilla minion that can become completely busted and almost guarantee a win if I play it against pirates. So it's not just like, oh, it'll help me out against pirates. No, it'll win you the game against pirates is the way they wanted this to pan out, I feel. And so it depends what you're targeting, but like, you know, I look back at Hemet Nesengiri, right? Like 5-mana 6/3 destroy a beast. Mm-hmm. Like that guy stat wise, given its effect, was actually like perfectly fine. The issue is there was never a point where you needed that against, you know, a wide array of decks, but there's no need to grow this guy. Like, he didn't need to become like a 10-10 on the back of killing something.
I mean, serious hate hate card, because they basically, you kill something and a 3/4 literally threatens anything they can put down the next turn. So
right,
the Galaka Crawler swing is made to just destroy that deck.
So. A Black Knight, right? Do you need to have Black Knight grow?
Yeah. See, Black Knight's a great example. Black Knight's extremely great value whenever it's in a meta that's very, very conducive for it. And yeah, I think the 4/5 is completely fine for a 6-drop, you know, and it's balanced in that way. Galaka Crawler is, I mean, it's only, you can only argue it's balanced because of the situational aspect of it. But is it really situational if you get to choose to put it in your deck in the first place?
Yeah, it's really situational. I like where Galaka Crawler set. I think we need something as strong as Galaka Crawler to keep Pirate Warrior in check.
Yeah,
I agree. Pirate Warrior is already like at the top of the meta.
Yeah,
yep.
Agreed. So,
yeah, the days of us just keeping Pirate Warrior in check by trying to control the weapons is. That wasn't enough, guys. That was not enough at all.
I feel like they might at some point, no, we're digressing here, but I think they might at some point modify some of the cards that exist in that deck, because again, it's going to stick around for a while, you know, just the aggro package. So it's down to patches. Maybe when patches rotates out, the deck just falls out. But
it loses a lot. Sassy catching gets much weaker without patches.
Exactly. Yes. So a lot of cards in there, just the early game, because the big issue really is the early game blowout. And that's actually what Golaka Crawler answers. Like, if Golaka Crawler was a 5-mana 5/6 that said destroy all pirates and gain +2/+2 for each of them, he'd be like, yeah, it doesn't matter, I'm already fucking dead. Like, it would work, but the Reaper.
I'd take that one in a heartbeat, dude.
I'm exaggerating, but the point is, you're at a point where if you don't control the pirates early game, then you're not really accomplishing anything against them. So, sure, I'd love a 5-mana 5/6 that destroys everything, gains +2/+2, but given that we need something early, then they're giving us an early answer to it. And I think Hungry Crab was designed the same way. And, you know, there's a reason why Hemet was made a 5-mana guy and Black Knight was 6. A lot of it had to do with the fact that you find very expensive beasts where you don't tend to find very expensive Murlocs. You don't tend to find, you know, heavily, you know, expensive pirates unless you're going to the mid game. Galaka ends up being played on curve very often if you have it in your deck. So it's a different hate card.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, that's going to be it for questions this week. If you want to write in, you know, in the future, go ahead and send those over to ValueTown@ChainManV.tv. And thanks, everybody else, for writing in. especially the three of you guys this week. And, you know, we've been getting some of the Mechatork Workshop submissions too. I don't want you guys to think that we forgot about you. We just haven't gotten a chance to do the segment in a few weeks. We'll bring it back very, very soon. So be ready for that. Just didn't think it was the right timing given that the new expansion comes out. There's just so many new cards to already talk about. So, you know, throwing out ideas already is kind of, I mean, I felt a little bit premature, but maybe in a week or two, we'll be able to bring that back. Keep on the lookout for that. But that's it, guys. I mean, it's pretty light week this week. This is probably one of the shorter shows we've done in a long time. But Zalay, you want to do any shout outs? Where can people find you?
Check out my stream, twitch.tv/ZalayHS. And if you want to find out when I'm streaming or see some of my deck lists, check out my Twitter at @LG_Zalay.
All right, Noxious.
Yeah, shout out to Complexity as usual. Hopefully, we'll get some cool Hearthstone results coming in. For the team, the year's been good, but it could get even better. You know, it's 2017, I'm calling it. We're doing great as a team. And I'll stream on Noxious_GG when I do. I won't be streaming for a week, so, you know, probably don't follow that too much. But I'll have some videos up on YouTube. And, Twitter, what is it, COL_Noxious.
All right, and I would thank you guys for doing the show with me today and everybody for watching, as well as, of course, our sponsor Ting, as well as the patrons for sponsoring or just supporting the show. You guys are awesome. And, you know, one last thing about Ting that I forgot to mention is that, you know, their customer support also is, like, award-winning customer support. So if you're tired of, you know, calling in and talking to just an automated, you know, automated response and not actually talking to a person, Ting always has somebody at the end of the phone, so to help you out and do whatever you want. So check them out. They're getting into Hearthstone some more and trying to support some more of the just Hearthstone events. And just support them because we need our sponsors in Hearthstone, and it's good when we get a new one. Go ahead and check that out, value.ting.com. And that's going to be it, guys, for this week's episode. You can find the VODs at youtube.com/ChamMV. You can find the VODs for all the previous episodes. And I'll be posting this also on iTunes very, very soon tonight. And follow the show's Twitter channel at ValueTownGG. That's going to be it, guys, this week. So for Zalay, Noxious, and myself, ChamMV, we'll see you next week.
Soothing.
Peace.
Feel good again.
Evidently not.